podcast brought to you by the Triad Network. This podcast is designed to share trending topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a behavioral and mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavior Health Today. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor. As many of you know, the field of behavior analysis is just exploding as it continues to grow in both the experimental and applied settings. Through their experimental research, the field of behavior analysis continues to uncover new and improved knowledge about behavior for the purposes of description, prediction, and control. That's why I'm so very excited to have with us today Kristen Rollman. Kristen is a board-certified behavior analyst and has practiced behavior analysis as an in-home clinician working with individuals with autism spectrum disorder and other developmental delays. She's based out of Virginia Beach and also is a test prep expert in the broader Triad family. Today, we're talking with Kristen about functional contextualism utilized within behavioral analysis. Kristen, it's so nice to have you with us today. Welcome.
Thank you, Graham. It's nice to be here.
So nice to have you. You know, Kristen, I've read a number of your writings, and I know that behavior analysts have a different cut to their jib. As behavior specialists, you folks tend to reject the typical and often used mentalistic and cognitive explanations. Most of those in behavioral science is used to explain behavior. Instead, you all prefer to study and emphasize the functional relationships between behavior and one's environment, looking to derive more of a descriptive knowledge in order to influence or change behavior by first systematically observing and then assessing the functional relationship between the targeted behavior and the environment, and then really creatively working to develop an understanding of the why and how behavior tends to occur. So I'm excited coming into this talk today to learn more about your approach to behavior analysis, but I would love to start with you just giving us some biographical background about your coming into this field, your interest in it, and why you're so interested in sharing with us today functional contextual approaches to behavior analysis.
Yeah, and I think that was a great intro. I think you could be a behavior analyst, Graham. You clearly have a good understanding of the science and what we do as behavior analysts. So to give you a little bit of background about myself. So yes, I'm a board certified behavior analyst and I was certified in 2015. So I went to James Madison University here in Virginia for my undergraduate and my graduate degrees. And I've been working as an in-home clinician providing applied behavior analysis therapy services. So shorthand ABA therapy for families and children with autism spectrum disorder and other developmental delays as well. And recently I actually started working with Triad Behavioral Health as their BCBA content manager for exam prep and continuing education products. So a little bit of like switching gears a little bit, moving from that clinical role into this test expert role. So the reason I thought that today would be a good time for us to really talk about functional contextualism in relation to behavior analysis. So this past year, I was teaching as an adjunct professor for an online behavior analysis graduate program. And each week, students would come to my class and they would give presentations on cases that they've been working on at their practicum sites. We would have really good discussions about assessment and programming, client progress, ethics, professional development. And I found that a lot of conversation was really coming up around this idea of functional contextualism and where that kind of can fit in for behavior analysts in their role, whether it's working in a clinic or whether it's working in the home setting or the classroom setting. I think, you know, functional contextualism really has its place in behavior analysis. And so I thought this would be a good opportunity to talk a little bit more about that.
Awesome. That's terrific. That's terrific. How fun that must be to be in the classroom and have that back and forth with these eager and earnest students trying to get a handle on these things and begin to implement them and see them come to fruition in the work that they're doing. So within this professional methodology, explain for us a little bit more, if you would, please, functional contextualism and its use within the ABA field and the therapy that you do.
Yeah, so functional contextualism, I think a good way to really look at it or talk about it in relation to ABA therapy is really to look at it as a perspective or an approach that it's really often discussed in relation to contextual behavioral science. So functional contextualists, we would say they seek to predict events and influence events. Yes. And to take it even further, if a person is familiar with some of the work of Stephen Hayes, they might even say with precision, scope, and depth. So I think a good way to understand it is to really break down the two words, functional and contextual. Good. So functional meaning it's serving a function. It benefits the individual. It is in line with the client's own goals and values and what their aptitudes are, what their personal preferences are, what is important to that individual in their individual lifespan. So that's really what the functional side entails. The contextual side is the context. So the environment in which it occurs. And for every single individual on the earth, that's going to be very different.
So as you put it like that, and I love this part of the approach, because it's so easy at times to, you know, to make judgments, but you're not looking to judge a behavior as good or bad or dysfunctional or even pathological. Instead, you're looking to try and make sense of it, of its function within its context. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I would say that's a good breakdown of that. In ABA therapy, a lot of what we do as behavior analysts is we assess, and from that assessment, then we develop our programming and the ways in which we implement our programming with our clients. And while the assessment side is very important, it's very valuable, it absolutely has its place, we should not be relying on assessment. Okay. And so some of the assessments we use might be, you know, in relation to developmental milestones that we would expect an individual to reach at certain stages of their development, right? And it is possible that, you know, by relying heavily on assessment, that we're missing out on this functional contextual piece where we might not really be considering, are we working on this skill? Are we targeting this thing? Because it really is relevant to this client in their context of their home environment, of their culture. Or is it just something that when I ran the assessment, it came up as missing? And because of that, now we're going to focus on that. And there really is a difference there.
Yeah, really, again, I really like that. So you're interested in the function of a behavior rather than the form of it. But I'm noticing that we can only, as you're describing that, we can only know the function of a behavior if we first know the context in which it occurs.
Sure. I think for the sake of the applied behavior analysis and that we're working towards socially meaningful change for these individuals, that you can't really remove the context and then expect to really promote progress in a way that is really meaningful to that individual.
Got it. I could certainly see when you're coming at it this way, that this contextually rich understanding of the person within their environment and seeing where these things can actually be functional. Just as an example, you know, I do a lot of couples therapy. And I work from a psychodynamic approach, and we watch some behavior sometimes take place in communication between couples and also the way they kind of guard themselves and protect themselves. And we say, well, why in the world would you, you know, in a moment of being able to share something, shut down? Why would you withdraw from the communication at that point? But not surprisingly, we look back in their histories and either they didn't have much modeling of healthy communication, so they never practiced that kind of the communication muscle to know how to do it. Or maybe people, when they did try and share early on, responded so aggressively, or maybe they were neglected. So in order to not be shut down or hurt or to be disappointed by neglect, which they anticipate now when they come into their situations now, their context now, we think, well, that behavior of shutting down as you try and connect more with your partner, that's a dysfunctional behavior. Well, no, it's not. It's an adaptive behavior. It's one of the things that helped them survive emotionally early on. But while that worked then, it may not work in the way that we want it to now. What I'm hearing you say now, if we can understand the behavior and its function within the context which is occurring, maybe we can begin to then shape some new behaviors to help these behaviors be something that allows people to function more effectively and efficiently and fully in their environments now.
Yeah, I think that's really well stated. I think a really important question for clinicians to ask themselves as they're working with their clients and maybe beginning ABA therapy is, have I really considered the family dynamics and the family values, the family history, those types of things, those types of responses really do get passed down from generation to generation. And it's really important to consider also how that family's culture is also going to be impacting their values and the environment.
Could you say just a wee bit more about that? I appreciate that piece. I live in a state, you know, I live in Hawaii, where it is a multicultural, we call kind of a melting pot. And so when I'm doing therapy, a real cornerstone piece is, how is this behavior functional within the context of your, you know, cultural dictates, and also, you know, generational aspects. Or like you're talking about the, you know, the transgenerational hand-me-down legacy components of how people do relationships and families. Tell me how you incorporate, this is very interesting to me, tell me how you incorporate the family assessment, the cultural assessment. What are you guys taking into consideration as you do that part of the assessment process to build that into the treatment programs that you come up with for the people you're working with?
I think a really important piece of it is going to be developing that rapport and that relationship with the family from the beginning, because that's how you're going to get that information from them. It's not always right there in front of you on the surface. Right. Also, you know, traditional ABA therapy, I think, really is heavily focused on one-on-one therapy with the client. And so sometimes, you know, although we have parent training, it's not always possible to really get to the root of some of these concerns within the family system. And cultural competency is something that has been even more recently discussed in behavior analysis, and how we can really start to add this to our training.
What I'm hearing you say here is that the relationship you form with the families that you come into is not just with the patient themselves, because that's just kind of one dimension of it. But what I really love about this approach is this relational stance you take to be accepting of and curious about and inquisitive in your questions, to try and understand even a functional component for the families too. And the functional component, maybe some of the cultural aspects of what they do and why they do what they do. And then to be in that non-judgmental approach, beginning to formulate some ways to approach some of the behavior change that you see possible. So given that, where my mind goes in that is, maybe give me some behaviors or examples of behaviors that present themselves for therapy in which you'd utilize this functional contextualism to better understand behavior and its involvement in the family. What are some examples of behaviors that present themselves?
I think a good example, if you come across a client or a family that wishes for you to work on a particular skill or skill set with their child that maybe for one reason or another, you're not so sure that that's the best way to go, that's a really good opportunity to start kind of asking yourself some questions like, am I choosing this goal from assessment, or is it based on the client's values and preferences, or is it just kind of based on the family's own values and preferences? And there's no perfect answer there. You really do need to consider all of that. It's really about finding that balance in there, because you will occasionally find families that really would like their therapists to work on these very specific behaviors that maybe the clinician themselves don't see as a priority, just with what they know clinically about development and stages of development and what needs to kind of come first. There might be some discord or disagreement there, but that's an opportunity then for the behavior analyst to really meet with the family and really figure out, why is this so meaningful to them? And a lot of our programming as behavior analysts is really stepwise. And so if we're working towards this like bigger long-term goal, sometimes the way the programming is implemented in the beginning, you cannot directly see how this is going to get you to there. So you might not be able to see how working on, for an example, like a pincer grasp is going to ultimately get us to a place where the child is independently, you know, completing their own homework at the table, right? We can't always see that. You know, I think by asking these types of questions, you're really able to connect more with the families, the clients, and the programming that you're implementing to really make sure that it is the best fit for that individual.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Continuing education is both a requirement and a learning opportunity, but finding the right CE provider can be challenging. AATBS, a triad company, offers continuing education for psychologists, social workers, marriage and family therapists, counselors, and behavior analysts. CE courses are available both individually and as part of our new All Access Pass. All Access Pass provides a library of over 250 unique courses. That's more than 800 hours of CEs, with new courses being added every month. As a special offer, Behavioral Health Today listeners can save 15% on CE purchases. Visit us at aatbs.com/BHT and enter promo code BHT15 during checkout. That's aatbs.com/BHT. Check out our library and check off your CE requirements today.
Yeah, I love that. I, again, that relational approach that you folks come with, and that non-judgmental, non-pathologizing view you have of, well, I'm just here to understand what's important to you as a patient I'm working with, you folks as a family, and what's going on, and also professionally bringing my expertise into it too. And in a collaborative way, kind of ideally synergistically coming together with a focus and how things are going to work. And I could see that being where the trust really develops, as they feel like they're heard, they're understood. You begin to implement some of these things over time, things begin to change in really desired and beneficial ways. Yeah, God, I love that. Kristen, earlier in the show, you talked about how you in the classroom really love to work with students coming into this field and ways that they present cases that they're, you know, trying to understand and having some fun with, and really being eager and earnest in their efforts to provide some help and understanding to those they're working with. And I would imagine in your role, you are probably so effective and helpful in bringing a greater context and meaning to what they're doing, whether it's answering their questions or pointing them in some good directions. But I'm curious, as you are listening and helping them formulate their approach, whether it's their assessment or their treatment planning, and et cetera, how might you encourage them to consider, and how do you teach them more about weaving in the contextual or the functional contextualism that we're talking about today? What's that look like in the classroom when you're talking to students?
The students that I work with, they bring their case presentations to class each week, and we kind of go through some of the things that they're working on with their clients at their practicum site. And so some questions that I ask them that can kind of give me clear indication on whether or not they're doing this or standing this piece of their role. So specifically, let's maybe look at like verbal behavior programming. So maybe like a manned program or a tact program. If a student is kind of telling me about a tacting program that they're working on with their client, and I might ask them the question, why? Why are you working on this? If someone can't really answer that, I think that's a really good place to start this type of conversation. And a lot of times it's because the assessment told me to, essentially, like my steps have kind of brought me here. This piece was missing. And so then I might say, well, why are you working on tacting these? And for anyone listening who's not super familiar, tacting is really just labeling. It's the identification of something. So we might say like, well, then why are you working on tacting these particular items or these particular targets, right? And if a student is not really able to explain that, I think then that's a really good time to have a conversation about functional contextualism and really making sure that the targets that are chosen within that program are relevant to the client's environment. I think it's really important to ask those questions to really be able to understand where that decision-making came from.
It's kind of funny because you're almost doing a functional contextual analysis of why are you going in this direction? What's your function in the context you're working within right now in your own thinking? But I love what you're doing here. You're kind of getting them to think kind of almost at a meta level of, yes, you know, why are you doing what you're doing? And it's an invitation to think a little bit more deeply. And I love that with students because they get this gut instinct or this some sense that I think is just important. But as you get to talk about it with them, they begin to put some more meaning to it, or maybe you get to with your expertise and your knowledge kind of shade some things in. So there's a greater meaning that they walk away with to then say, okay, this is what I'm doing and I'm doing some right things. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's good. Well, I love this approach. And I think the functional contextual assessment is such a way to appreciate one in their environment, one in their life, and ways to assess these things without, again, that judgmental, pathological, good, bad, dysfunctional, functional role. It allows people to be understood and for them to feel accepted. That's got to be very rewarding to be working in this field.
Yes, it really is. And I think that there's a lot of space right now in the field of behavior analysis for more conversations around this and how we can more effectively shift in that direction, because we really do see the benefit of it.
It is really a field, isn't it? I've done some research recently, over the last year. It is truly a field that is exploding. I started that with today, but that is so true. And I was looking worldwide exploding. Have you noticed that as well?
Yeah, I've worked with students internationally before, and it's really impressive how quickly this field has grown and how much it's continuing to grow. I imagine that it'll continue to do so in all sorts of different directions. And a question that I get a lot from students that I work with is, what else can I do in the field of behavior analysis, or where else can I apply my knowledge and understanding of this? And I think that by kind of understanding functional contextualism in relation to behavior analysis, it really does open up doors for someone who might want to branch out beyond the scope of autism spectrum disorders. There's a lot of conversation more recently too around the inclusion of ACT or acceptance-based training, right? And looking at how language and our understanding of language, and really through an understanding of relational frame theory, how can this perspective on language and language development really help us as behavior analysts expand beyond the current scope that we work in?
Yeah, really good. It's kind of fun to watch that. I agree, kind of ripple out in that way and have some really effective application in, again, some very beneficial ways. So I think that's very exciting. You know, we have a lot of listeners that love to kind of follow up and find out some resources that you might recommend. Give us some understanding and give us some resources you might point us towards that you think could be helpful to us.
Yeah, I think that anyone who's really interested in expanding their scope of practice should really take a look at some of the research and literature in relational frame theory and in contextual behavioral science as well. I think those are really important areas to learn more about in order to really understand how you can better utilize your understanding of behavior analytic principles beyond your current scope. So I really like Steve Hayes. And so a book that Steve Hayes and David Sloan Wilson published is Evolution and Contextual Behavioral Science. And it's really a compilation of some papers really explaining evolution and contextual behavioral science. And as a behavior analyst, when I read this, it really kind of expanded my understanding of how my training and the experience that I've had working in the clinical settings can really go even deeper and be more effective.
Really good. Christian, you're doing some great work, both in the classroom with those you're seeing in your practice. And it's pretty exciting work. And I appreciate you bringing to us an understanding of this functional contextualism and how it adds to and complements just a greater understanding and appreciation for the people that we work with. So thank you so much for being with us today and sharing your work with us.
Thank you very much.
It's been great to have you with us. Thank you. Been great to have you with us. And for those listening in, we always appreciate you being with us. And we'll look forward to having you join us next time on Behavior Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community, and if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tribe Network, all rights reserved.